Ladies and gentlemen, sing the chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water. Bring it on.
We're not really introducing the chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water. We're more introducing the Final Play podcast. But anyway.
Yeah, I see. Fred gets it.
That's right. We're just doing a microphone check. Check. One, two. One, two.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's a good way to start.
Fade that out before we get to many expletives.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. That was the only bit I was waiting for. Oh, my God. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play podcast. This is week three of NRL finals for 2020. So there's only two games this week, starting with the Friday game, which is a Storm up against the Raiders. And the Storm straight through to the grand
final. I'm sure you're quite happy with the result on Friday night.
So I went out and watched this. So I had a two drink maximum. And
so what? Two drinks per 15 minutes.
So we only got there like 4 minutes late, and obviously I missed the first try. But then they put us at the, and we moved, but they put us behind this, well, from my view, this big pole. So I got up and then moved to get a drink, and they were up like 18-0. And what the holy hell? 16-0, I think it was.
So you were like about 20,000 people at Suncorp Stadium trying to get in. They had a ticket tech machine malfunction. How crazy? How 2020 is that? Like honestly, how 2020 is that? Just have your ticket tech system crash, and you've only got half the amount of people in the stadium. Like that's unbelievable.
And how many is that? Because they're still not producing the numbers, but I'm wondering how many were actually in there because it looked fairly full.
I thought I heard him say on the broadcast that there was about 17,000 already in, but there was still over half the amount of people outside when this ticket machine by Ticket Tech actually crashed.
This is good crowds. And because you just can't beat that atmosphere, the sound, everything like that. But I mean, I said this last week about Melbourne, but and again, they aren't the team that really do the hot starts. But my God, like it was just an avalanche.
It was an avalanche to start. Like you want to start fast and you want to start hot, you know, in a preliminary final like that. But the start that they had was just unbelievable. Yeah. And I don't know whether it was the fact of Melbourne just come out and obviously wanted to stamp their authority on the game, or the couple of tries early and Canberra were just totally shell shocked.
Yeah. No, they just couldn't. I don't know. Like, I guess it's not. I don't think defensively they were in lapses, especially in that first bit. I just think they were just shell shocked because of how quick Melbourne were playing. I just can't, like, they are a grind-out team, and they're not doing that. Maybe it's just because it's all completely different, but they're not doing that this year. They're getting out of these hot starts.
That gap that Jesse Bromwich went through for the first try, you could drive a Mack truck through it. Like, you just you can't have gaps like
that's
right
true.
Next to the post inside your first 5 minutes. Like, you can't afford to do that.
Their biggest thing was errors. It stood out to me, obviously, in the error count of 13-4. Like, there was no errors, hardly any, I should say, by the Storm. But not 13's not a lot of errors really either. But, I mean, Melbourne will just make you pay. That's the difference.
When it's a discrepancy the way that it is, like, you just can't keep turning the ball over and giving it to Melbourne and hope that that they're going to make mistakes. And when they're punishing your errors, then you're playing. That's what I mean. They're playing from behind. They're 18-0 down, 16-0 down. But before you know it.
Yeah, I think I'll say they must have shored up Jack Whiten because I don't remember seeing him much at all. If like he only got 65 meters, which really the way he's been playing the last few weeks. Isn't much. But I'm really looking at the whole team now. There wasn't a lot of yards. made by Canberra. But I don't know, just Jack Whiten wasn't, not that he wasn't his usual self, like they must have just shored him up, because I did not hear his name. I didn't see him that much on the screen.
I think they closed him down really well. I guess it's a game plan where you'd come in and you would say, right, we will live with anybody else beating us, but we're not going to let Jack Whiten, and I guess sort of, you know, your other main weapon there is Josh Papali. We're not going to let those two guys beat us. We'll live with George Williams. We'll live with, you know, Nicol Klokstad. We'll live with somebody else, you know, Hodrich, putting on the miracle play or the big play to beat us. We're not going to let that's typical Storm football. We'll take away your best weapon.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly what they did. And then obviously after halftime 24-6, having that hot start. And they know how to grind out wins when they're having those hot starts, because 18 against Melbourne is very hard to come back. It's extremely hard to come back. They didn't score for a very long time.
It's near impossible. The way Canberra sort of defended in that first 20 to 25 minutes, there was no energy. Their scramble D was just wasn't great. The Nick Kotrick on try number four, the Nick Kotrick trying to bat it dead, he just totally had an air whiff and it went straight up in the air, and it was Justin Olam that scored. What is this? It's the 22nd minute, and they've scored four tries. That's good that you've still got 58 minutes to try and claw your way back into the game, but when you can't help but look at the scoreboard and go, oh, all right, like this, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? And like you said, 24-6 down at half time, you've got to go into the sheds and you've got to come back out as if it's nil all. Like you've just got to totally take the scoreboard out of it. And like you said, yeah, to start that second half, there was defensive intent by both teams.
By both teams, correct. That was
crazy. Like, yeah, I think it was Dale Finucan got all the way back out to the 10-meter line and then just got on the opening kickoff for the second half and got driven back in the in goal.
Yeah.
So whatever Ricky said to sort of start off, that the intent was there, but it just didn't last.
The other thing I noticed was there wasn't a lot of tackles made, and that's not to say it has to be, but you know, when they were hovering just around that 300 tackles, that's both sides, that's not really a lot of tackles, and there wasn't a lot of missed tackles. It's funny, I think they completed most sets, both teams. I mean, Storm had a better completion rate, 29 to 33 to 25-35, but I don't know, just I'm used to seeing that mark, you know, 350s, 400s and all that. There wasn't a lot of tackles in general, which is good for a game, I guess.
No, that's right. And I think a lot of times as well, like, you know, especially in the first week of the finals was just the points galore. But these sort of turned into your traditional sort of beat them down, grind them up type finals games. Yeah, it looks like, you know, a 20-point deficit, you know, at full time, you know, 30 points to 10 looks like, you know, a big scoreline. But you take out those four tries that Melbourne scored inside the first 20, 25 minutes, then essentially the game did turn into a beat them down, sort of grind them up. It was just, they just come out with absolute intent and intensity, and the Canberra couldn't match it. And Ricky Stewart was nice and calm, you know, in the post-game press conference. And then, all of a sudden he just gets up and walks out, you know, just thanks everybody and walks out.
He was just perplexed. I guess he just seemed perplexed. That's how I took that.
Just super disappointed to get that far, to do what they did throughout the season with the injuries that they had, I guess, you know, to key players as well. What I found a little strange was the starting of Havili at dummy half and running with him all the way through to even to 10 minutes into the second half and then bringing Tom Starling on, to me, that just didn't make any sense.
Well, like, that's right.
When you're down 24-0 and then halftime, you know, coming into halftime 24-6,
yeah,
you need a spark.
Yeah.
And Havili's just not going to give that to you. He had to bring Tom Starling on earlier. He just absolutely, even after the fourth try, Ricky had to do something
to try and
spark Canberra into action.
Well, Tom Starling's been that stark. I'm still surprised he didn't start, to be honest. I wasn't sure where Ricky was going with putting Havili as a starting hooker. It was a bit of a, sort of didn't make sense for me.
I couldn't understand it. Like, there's two types of dummy halves. You know, there's an eyes forward dummy half and there's an eyes sideways dummy half. Havili is an eyes sideways dummy half. He's looking to give good service, you know, to your prop forwards and get the ball to your halves and do that, you know, in a timely fashion and do that efficiently and quickly. Whereas Tom Starling is proven himself to be an eyes forward, like Damien Cook.
Yeah.
An eyes forward dummy half where he's looking to take on the line, looking to challenge the markers and to try and get them over the advantage line. He had to do something. Like, it just didn't make any sense. You're down 22-24-0. Like, why not make the change then in the 25th minute? He had to do something. And he just kept rolling with the game plan. You've got to have the ability. You know, you've just been smacked in the mouth four times so early in that game. You have to be able to respond to that and to change it up.
Just looking through that 1-13, I always find it so perplexing that Melbourne, and I don't think he cares, but can't fit Dale Finucane in that side. He's still in the interchange, which is fine because he can play anywhere on the interchange, but it's just the amount, like, their forward pack is so well drilled that Dale Finucane can't fit into that 13, which is, it's not that bad.
It's insane.
It's insane.
And Finucane is going to be in the mix for State of Origin. Like, how does that happen?
I don't know. I mean, their starting lock was Nelson Asofa. I'm going to say that. Asofa Solomona.
That's the biggest lock in the competition.
It's exactly what I was just about to say. That's the biggest lock I've ever seen in my life. I don't get it.
When you're rolling with Big Nelson at lock, you know you've got a nice wealth of forwards, and that's to the credit of Craig Bellamy. Like, well, he's been bringing him off the bench.
Yeah.
And this was not so much a rare start for Nelson, but he's embraced that sort of bench role. Same with Big Tino. Like, Tino likes to come off the bench as well.
Yeah,
so I guess you could have gone either way. You know, put Tino at lock and bring Asofa Solomona off the bench, or either way. But it's a wealth of riches.
115 kilos, 200 centimeters playing lock position.
He's a monster.
Oh, he's a monster. But it's a world. I mean, and this is why teams like Tino is going to Gold Coast. This is why teams love poaching from Melbourne, because they're just a well-drilled side. And they prove it year in, year out. They really do.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's the system there as well. And you sort of go through, you know, they had the likes of Paul Momorowski, who come across from the Tigers. I think he was part of the Harry Grant switcheroo. You know, you got guys like Branko Lee, who's a little bit of a discard. You know, he's been to a few clubs. You know, he's recently at the Gold Coast, was sort of, you know, in and out of first grade side. And, you know, he goes down to Melbourne, solidifies a wing slash centre spot.
Yeah.
And he could be, you know, the Queensland are in sort of dire straits at the moment in a lot of positions. He could be in line for an Origin call-up.
Which is crazy. Before you say, if you talked to him a year ago, he wasn't even getting a start in, you know, like floating around a Gold Coast, and now he could transition to an Origin position. That's just Bellamy. What did you think before we move on of Cameron Smith getting sort of carried off at the end there, and then sort of saying, but then thinking nothing of it? Like, he goes, yeah, no, it wasn't anything. Like, come on. It's like going to be the worst.
No, look, I guess, yeah, sort of, I heard a little bit of the press conference afterwards, and, you know, Craig Bellamy's like, oh, you know, I thought it was a nice gesture, and You know, being carried off, you know, sort of one more time, you know, this time in a Storm jersey, not in a Queensland jersey. Wow. And they sort of, do you know what I mean? Like, do you want to telegraph it and say, yes, this is the last time that he's going to be running out of Suncorp Stadium?
No, well, my other thing, well, I don't know. Well, that's right. But my other thing is I'm sick of hearing mates and I'm hearing so much chatter that there's every chance he could play for Maroons. He could. I know. But I'm just saying I keep hearing it.
Look, to say that we don't that Queensland don't need him and couldn't use him, that's absolutely false. Like,
of course.
We could totally need Cameron Smith, but all you're doing is not so much stunting the growth, but you need to blood the future now. And look at some of the dummy halves that have gone by the wayside with Cameron Smith being there the last 15 years of dominance. Do you know what I mean? There's only a couple of guys that have sort of slid in. You know, guys like Matt Ballon. You know, you go back further. You go someone like PJ Marsh. Do you know what I mean? Like you get Nathan Friend. Jake Friend. You could even say Nathan Friend. I'm not 100% sure if he's a Queenslander or not.
No, but it's the same thing is happening at Melbourne with Harry Grant and Brandon Smith. You're right. It's alienating like potential future dummy half. So I just keep hearing it. We'll see. But
I'm sure that as Queenslander supporters out there would say yes, we will welcome him into the team. But I just think, you know, if they're going to be so decimated in other areas, you know, whether it's a second-rate, third-rate fullback, wingers, so you're going to have makeshift centres there. Your halves combination is going to be your top halves combination. You're not going to probably have the greatest forward pack there. You may as well blood somebody like Harry Grant or Reid Marnie. Like, it's no point. Nah. There's no point bringing Cameron Smith in there. Bring him in as an advisor or... Do you know what I mean? As part That's of the fair. Training staff or something like that, he doesn't need – I don't think he needs to be out there with them. Like, bring him – the season will be over. Bring him in as a, you know, a special assistant coach. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know –
I just think if he ends up winning with Melbourne, that would be the most idiotic thing to do because that would be the best way to go
done.
Out.
Not, he's
so,
done.
Anyway.
If he wins with Melbourne, he's done.
Well, their opponents look like they're going to be the Penrith Panthers. So they just beat the Rabbitohs 20-16 and another sort of, high octane sort of game, really. It was very high octane. At least, like I mean, at least for Penrith. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it was. Penrith got out to, it was the other way. Alex Johnston got out to a really, really sort of quick start, but Penrith hit back sort of straight away with Brian Toto.
That try that Johnston scored, like, pretty much come off the sequence of play that sort of set up that third minute try for Johnston was the pretty soft penalty, I think, on James Tarmo supposedly attacking the legs of Adam Reynolds. Mm-hmm. He basically got right underneath him, and I sort of mirrored it the same way that you would think of an NBA 3-point shooter. Like, you have to give them a place to land. So you can't cut their feet out from underneath them, much like a three-point shooter. You can't get in their space underneath their feet. And that's pretty much what Jimmy Tarmo did. He sort of fell over a little bit. He got right underneath Adam Reynolds. Adam Reynolds put up the big bomb. He was up in the air, and he didn't give him a place to land. So they decided to take the 2 points.
Yeah.
He misses. They go for obviously there's a 20 meter dropout restart, and it just as it sort of goes along, there ends up being a one on one steal. You know, the Rabbitohs make a mistake. Penrith gets it back. There's a one on one steal. The Rabbitohs get it back. Two tackles later, there's that beautiful chip kick to the wing on the second tackle of that set, which is ballsy. But there was nobody out on
that
left-hand side.
That was just great vision by Adam Reynolds, really.
No, that's right.
So, Look, after it was a very close sort of first half. After the second half, I genuinely thought, the way Cody Walker was sort of darting and weaving, and God, they talked him up so much during that game, but darting and weaving, especially on Fox Sports, I thought they had a genuine chance of coming back and winning it, the Rabbitohs.
No, absolutely. He had a couple of. I guess sort of mishaps and simple errors as they're trying to run the ball and have those sort of sweeping plays, backline moves and stuff like that. There was a couple of times where he'd sort of got the backline move that he a couple of poor passes. There was one there in the second half where he looked up just real quick, just took a real quick look at the line of defense and the ball just went straight through his hands and he knocked it on. The try that ended up sort of being towards the end of that game, which got them to 20 points to 16, was just an absolute shocker of a pass that hits Corey. Yeah, that Corey Allen has got to try and pick up off his bootlaces.
Yeah,
he kicks it once, kicks it twice.
That was awesome. Yeah,
and
yeah.
He scores.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He, I don't know if you see the knee knock that he took earlier in the half, like right to sort of to start that second half. He took like a knee/quad knock from Liam Martin.
Yeah.
And that really, he was hampered by that. And they dumped him out on the wing and he still scored.
Yeah, no, he did. It was well executed. I mean, as far as from his sort of standpoint, Corey Allen's standpoint, he had no sort of choice. The ball was down at his bootlaces anyway.
It was unbelievable.
Choice. He couldn't pick it up. It was the smartest play to do anyway. He didn't have a choice.
But it's just such depth touch, you know. One little chip, little chips. It just sat up for him in the in goal. He rolls it. He rolls his hands over the top of it. It was unreal for them.
Like
and then
kicking a soccer ball. But
no, that's right.
A completely different ball that could go either way, really. And he was only working in probably half a meter, so it was crazy.
Look, one thing I noticed too, especially in that first half. With both teams sort of trying to get the field position advantage, they were kicking a lot on the third and fourth tackle, just to try and turn the fullback and the wingers around, just to sort of burn a little bit of energy with those guys, and then obviously trying to make your forwards have to run back and burn a little bit of energy that way to sort of so they get back on side so they can be involved in the attack again. Yeah. Not so much in the second half, but definitely both teams in the first half, I thought, were trying to turn each other around. But once that second half started to come around and Penrith started to assert their dominance a little bit, they just slowly began to win that field position battle, and they were starting to bury South down in their own half. And they just started to squeeze and squeeze. And it just ended up being just that little bit too much of a mountain too high to climb for South, even though they made it a thrilling end to the game. But I just thought that was just sort of a typical Penrith, especially in the last few rounds. They're getting into that sort of finals mode where they're just not blasting the absolute you know what out of you. And they're just grinding their way out of it. They're not making mistakes.
Yeah.
And they're just forcing you. They're forcing your hand. I'm talking about South.
Yeah.
And they're just waiting for you to make a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's how it sort of played through the whole sort of game.
That's finals football.
That's exactly right.
Put the pressure on.
James Fisher-Harris had a high shot that was put on report, but it's already been cleared. So that's
that's already been cleared. So he'll be fine.
He'll be fine.
Look,
yeah.
I guess a little concerning too going into the grand final is Appy Coruscant sort of come off with about 20 odd minutes to go.
Yeah.
Goes in the sheds. They must have. I don't know. They must just have like a rack of painkilling needles. I don't know, in a cabinet there somewhere, and they just jab one on the shoulder and then shipped him back off out. Like I swear, it felt like about 4 minutes of game time, and he's walking back out of the sheds, with this pain. He's had this pain killing injection in his shoulder, and I thought he showed a lot of grit to come back out to sort of try and lead the team with Nathan Cleary to try and get them to their first grand final since 2003.
And I think he'll be there. I mean, he I think he's already been talking about, giving Cameron Smith a souvenir of not that what he was, like a party pooper sort of souvenir on his 430th game, Cameron Smith's game. So, which is good. Hey, that's fine. You can go out there and you can do all the trash talking you want. So,
that's right.
I just think it's going to be close, especially now that they they've got Kikau back, Penrith. Because I honestly thought that was going to be their biggest loss, and they might struggle. Because he's been brilliant. He's been absolutely brilliant.
He's been unbelievable this whole season. To have him back in that second row spot. And look, you know, Melbourne's second rowers aren't terrible in Felice Kaufusi and Kenny Bromwich. Like, they're representative players, so they're going to have their work cut out for them, you know, on whatever side that they decide to put, you know, Kikau on. So, that's a super exciting game to sort of watch. The completion rates got better as the game went on. I thought both teams, you know, even though it was 14-6 at halftime to Penrith, I thought teams, that they looked a little nervous. The completion rate. The completion rate in the first half by both teams is pretty ordinary. It was like 66% for both. I think South were 12 or 18 and Penrith were 14 for 21.
Yeah.
So once they started to sort of get it took I thought a long time for both teams to sort of get in the groove, even though sort of Penrith had two tries and a penalty goal inside that first half. And then, you know, like we said, you know, once they start to win that that field position battle, they ended up having less possession than what
They had less possession. They did the least amount of tackles, and they did the more run. Had more run meters and runs. So I'm not sorry, not unreal. Run meters. They were just behind
you,
that.
You see
so.
In that first half too. Penrith were really carving up South out wide. You think back to the first game between Melbourne and Canberra. One thing that Canberra tried to do was to try and go around Melbourne. You know, they couldn't go through them through the middle. Canberra tried to go around them. Yeah, just as a bit of to try and take a bit of focus off their forwards, and not even that worked. So, you know, Canberra was sort of stunted both ways in that regard, and it looked like that Penrith sort of had the wherewithal to try and punch around South instead of trying to go up the middle.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's how it looked. I mean, Nathan Cleary again. Controlled that game pretty well, and they, you know, it could have went a lot of different ways. Adam Reynolds missed a conversion, but he also just missed out on that 40-20, which could have been a huge.
Oh, he had his foot on the line. Oh my god! And Brayton Astor was going off his rocker, going, "Oh, it's a 40-20." It's like, well, clearly he didn't look where he kicked it from because he had like a whole boot on. The 40-meter line, it's the old cliche. It's a game of inches, and that's exactly what it is. And it was a pretty poor sort of sequence that led up to that as well. At a dummy half, it sort of went to Cody Walker. He didn't want a bar of it, and Adam Reynolds is sort of standing back on the inside to the right of Cody Walker, and he's just like, oh, you want me to kick it? Oh, okay. And he just put that left boot on. You know, the red stripe of the 40-meter line. And that's, I mean, it would have been an amazing play if it would have been a 40-20. But, you know, like we said, it's a game of inches. And that's just what happens. And you could see the referee walking over to the middle of the field with his arm out, you know, signaling for a Penrith scrum. And I think a lot of the South players thought that, he's absolutely kicked the 40-20, and he kind of didn't.
So that'll put then first and second teams have finished first and second. Melbourne or Penrith, I should say, finished first. So Penrith up against Melbourne, one versus two. I mean, you already know who I'm going to go for, but who are you thinking?
Look, I think that Penrith. Look, this is what is this? Is this Melbourne's fourth grand final in 5 years?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's unbelievable. Like you go back.
It is.
You go 2016. Okay, they lose to Cronulla. 2017, they blast the absolute crap out of the Cowboys because they've just run out of gas. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like this is just such a hot run of form that Melbourne are on. And yeah, this will be the first time that a lot of these guys at Penrith have been in a grand final.
I think, just for Melbourne, if they keep doing these hot starts, they will blitz Penrith. It's shocking to me how well they're starting games, because that's just not their game, which is great. I don't care, but
and if you can get away with it, and if you can do that, especially in a grand final, if you can get out to a big start, then it near on makes it impossible. I sort of circle all the way back to 2001. With Newcastle, who I think, I can't remember if they finished fourth or fifth in that year, Parramatta were the overwhelming favourites and the minor premiers by a country mile in 2001. Newcastle come out and scored 24 first half points, and just totally, Andrew Johns, I think Billy Peden had a double in that game. Steve Simpson was massive in that game, and as they just put the sword to Parramatta in that game in the first half. Yeah, the score by the end of it ended up being 30-24. Like, Parramatta fought back and scored four second half tries to Newcastle's one, but it makes it so hard for you to come back, especially if you can put on bulk points in that first half. It just makes it impossible.
Yeah, it does. It does. But Penrith have a great side, so it's hard to say, because they're 1-13. Well, you look at both of the 1-13s. There's real no kinks in the armors, really.
No, that's right. It's going to be who's going to blink first.
Oh, no. Yeah. Sorry, I'm saying oh no because we're going to move on to it later. But of course, like when you refresh it, that like a certain Dally M winner.
Oh wow!
Certain Dally M winner just popped up on my screen.
What did I tell you?
Yeah. So. We'll talk about our teams in a second, but by the looks of it, Jack Whiten, Canberra's Jack Whiten, has taken out the...
What did I tell you?
Before
we hit record on this, he had such a brilliant end-of-season run that he was going to come home in an avalanche.
And he got rested, too. Wasn't that last game that he got rested?
In that last
game,
that's right.
So, I kind of thought Cleary wasn't the standout favourite, but I thought Cleary would, having... You know,
I still would have thought he had a more consistent
I feel
season
like he did,
over
but,
20 rounds.
But yeah, there you go. So before we move on, talking about our teams of the year that we were looking at. Did you have a stud and dud of the week? We'll start with the stud of the week.
I don't think you can really go past, especially the first half of what Melbourne did. To just come out
and just
punch Canberra directly in the face. Not once, not twice, three times, but four times.
Well, I suppose you could. In around
20 minutes.
Yeah. And those first three tries were just boom, boom, boom. They were just like that, Canberra just had no idea, not one idea what to do.
Just unbelievable play. By Melbourne to come out in such a big game, Canberra's this team has been there before. Obviously, they made the grand final last year, so they're not short on big game experience. And for Melbourne to just come out and just slap them around inside the first 20 minutes was a masterclass, like unbelievable. And that tackle when Canberra's trying to come back, and Nick Kotrick almost scores in the corner. And the guy who makes the tackle is Cameron Smith.
Cameron Smith, yeah. Yeah, it was a try-saver tackle. Yeah, it was
just
a brilliant
absolute,
tackle.
Just try-saver, and it just stuck, that little bit more of a knife into Canberra. You know, if they score there, you think, maybe they might be able to mount a comeback. But, old man Rivers, Cameron Smith, comes through with the goods.
Not Philip Rivers, just to not remember.
No, not Philip Rivers. Like,
he played all right
today.
He did play all right. It's across the board. I pretty much had the same thing. It was just their first half, but you could even really drill it down to that first 20 minutes, just how electric they were. Everybody, every player was electric. Not one was making a mistake. They were Funivalu, who usually is just, well, generally can be error-ridden, was brilliant.
Brilliant
the whole game.
Suli was great.
Yeah, he was. That was probably his best. Like, he usually, I mean, Adokar usually outperforms him, but he was great. He's still possibly, because of what's going on with the rugby, he still possibly could be there next season. Because,
well, that's true.
There's you know, with the money that the rugby aren't sort of getting, there's every chance they might honour his contract. So, which would be great because we're going to end up losing Adokar, unfortunately. I had the same. I mean, yeah, the dud of the week, were you looking at sort of single, not an actual person, is probably the best way to put it.
No, look, I didn't think there was a lot of really sort of standout, you know, sort of poor performances. You don't want to sort of, you know, label anybody with that. But I thought, look, when all the chips were on the line, really, especially, you know, with Canberra being already 16 points in the hole, the air swing by Nick Kotrick to try and bat the ball dead. And it just is just, yeah, just pretty much a total air swing. It bobs up in the air, and Justin Olam sort of swoops in like Superman and dives over the top of another player to score their fourth try. Just,
yeah.
Sometimes you sort of, players are obsessed with trying to bat the ball dead,
yeah,
instead of just taking control of the ball and either planting it. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they've got the obsession with trying to bat the ball dead.
Because it could go, that could go horribly wrong. Someone could blitz through, and then yeah, there's a lot of white. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a little things, but that sort of makes sense. I mean, the reason I'm saying unfortunately, because he had one of his greatest games this year. He was great, not just the two tries, but he just seemed to be everywhere he needed to be, which he generally hasn't been the case. It's always been Charles Nicol Klockstack that's always been there.
No, that's right. Well, and that's the thing, you know, that's going to be, you know, a couple of people are leaving Canberra at the moment. You know, Luke Bateman's gone, and obviously Kotrick is going to the Bulldogs. So, you know, a couple of guys sort of are leaving Canberra, but I'm sure that they'll be able to sort of fill those voids rather easy, because they'll still have that win now mentality, and I think they'll be able to attract, you know, especially English stars to go there. So what, mm-hmm. you know, they're losing Nick Kotrick and the most underutilized English winger I've ever seen in my life, and Ryan Hall that played for the Roosters. Why couldn't Canberra try and poach him instead of him going? They're losing a winger. They could absolutely – he would be a super replacement for Nick Kotrick on the wing.
You are his biggest fan. Yeah, you are. Yeah, yeah. I think he's out of contract now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's gone back to England.
Yeah, which makes total sense.
Over 200 tries in the Super League, and he couldn't get one in the NRL because he never got used.
Yeah, that's right.
Like,
yeah,
must have just been absolutely regretting the last 2 years of him – being in this country, and it's got, wow, I can't even break into this side. I'm an English international. Yeah, I've scored 40,000 points over there, and I can't break into this side. Like, give me a break.
Well, he regressed. I don't think he played England because it's not his fault. That's exactly right. They didn't use him. No, you're right. I agree with that. So we thought we'll go through and sort of look at our team of the year, unlike what the Dally M's did this year where they – name basically a 1 to 13. We're just going to go with, you know, one from that position, I suppose, is the best way to put it.
I guess that was a change that they've done this year. You know, they'll name two wingers, two centers, two second rowers. We just thought that we would go through a more traditional way that they do the Dally M's and just do one from each position.
It's not like a bit too bad. It's not like NBA where if you get named one of those teams, you get that nice little bump up in contract. That'd be awesome.
No, that's right. You get a nice little handsome bonus.
excuse me. Did you have who did you have for your fullback of the year?
Look, I think fullback was pretty straightforward in James Tedesco.
Ooh.
Really? Look, I very much considered Charles Nicol Klockstad, but in the end, like I think, yeah, the class of Tedesco, he doesn't go missing in games. you know, the Roosters sort of, I guess, sort of by the end of it had a little bit of an underwhelming season, I guess, with the amount of injuries that they had in finishing fourth. And that's nothing to sneeze at, finishing fourth in the competition. But I just think, you know, James Tedesco still sort of carried on his form, you know, his good form from the last couple of years in that fullback spot. And I think, yeah, he's super consistent. I just thought it was a pretty straightforward and kind of boring sort of pick.
I went the other way that I thought was consistent enough for his team this year, and they had to rely on him heavily, and it was Clinton Gutherson. I think he if he wasn't in that side, there was no way they were getting to where they got.
At the start of the season, like the red hot start that they had, like he was just the heart and soul. He was the everything of that team.
I still think he was during the, you know, even towards the end, whereas even Tedesco a little bit sort of slid off. And that's probably not his. I mean, ever since that South game, which I still, there's something there because I don't know. But ever since that Rabbitohs Roosters game when they got demolished by like 60 points.
I don't want to read too much into itself. Like you can have those types of games, especially when they're a big rival game like that. Yeah. One of those sort of funky sort of games that just happened. And I don't think it sort of affected them that much going into the finals, but to be, you know, the oldest rivalry in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to sort of take a little bit out of it, but it's just sometimes you're off and the other team's on. You know, when you've been playing for 112 years, it is what it is.
But Clint Gutherson, I just thought he was the hardest out of the Parramatta Eels this year. And look, and he's probably not going to make it. He'll be in the squad, but deserves to sort of be at least mentioned in that New South Wales squad. And it's going to be unlucky because
he's battling a little bit of injury. I think, you know, Pappenhausen sort of deserves an honourable mention as well for fullback of the year.
Oh, God. So many riches. It's crazy.
Exactly. But you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, even if Tedesco doesn't fulfill his duties to get into that State of Origin side, like I said, he's battling a little bit of injury. You know, they've got Gutherson, they've got Pappenhausen, so they're not really going to lose that much.
Who did you have for winger of the year?
I guess there was a few to sort of choose from, but I went with the Tigers, David Nofaluma.
That's exactly who
I thought that he sort of really sparked a lot of the offense for them. And okay, a lot of people would say, okay, wingers, all they do is just, you know, put the ball down over the try line. But I thought he was pretty influential in the way that the Tigers sort of went about their business, especially with an inexperienced fullback in Adam Dewey. He took a lot of the heavy lifting, especially coming off their own line. You know, the amount of tries that he scored as well, like he's super athletic. His tries, just amazing.
I wrote some of it. So he got 17 tries in 20 games, 17 line breaks, 118 tackle breaks, and he averaged 180 metres per game. Was the Tigers' main man this year, and it wasn't even close. So, yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I could have thrown Adokar in there, but I think Nofaluma did.
You could go with the likes of Adokar, you know, Mike Acevo,
there's a few, of course.
Those sorts of guys. There was a few out there, but I just thought, you know, I'm sort of picking consistency-wise that, you know, and Nofaluma, okay, granted he was on a baddish sort of team. Doesn't mean you can't still be the winger of the year and the best player of that position.
Yeah. Who did you have for centre of the year? So this was
like
hard.
Like I said, I thought that this was a little bit hard, but when I sort of started to sniff around, you know, the centers that were pretty good this year, and once again it's a guy on a bad team, I went with Zach Lomax.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's not too bad.
I thought he's pushed himself into Origin contention, and he's a big sort of rangy sort of center. The skill set that he's got, the footwork, he's got the power. He kicks goals. I thought once again, consistency wise, you know, I'll be using it all. You know, all
it's hard. Yeah, I'm going to do the same with this guy. I couldn't look past because I mean, if we're I don't know if we were talking about this, but I'm going to say it now. But he's everybody's improved. He's, to me, the most improved player this year, especially from his first season, was Stephen Crichton. Stephen Crichton was unbelievable. And he's another guy that's, you know, potentially can weasel, he's not weasel his way, worm his way into the New South Wales Origin squad as well, which is ridiculous. But 16 tries, 16 line breaks. His defense improved dramatically from the last season, because no one was talking about him last season, but last season was his first season. So he's very young, and Penrith won the 13 is just, if not scarier than Melbourne
solid.
Side. It's very
it's
solid.
Pretty solid.
I think, yeah, no, but Zach Lomax, oh, man, we're going to, oh, we could have a B squad. I'm sorry. It's just, and it's not nice to say.
It could be like Australian cricket from the mid 90s. You could have Australia A and an Australian side. You could have a New South Wales and a New South Wales A side. And both of those teams would probably knock off Queensland.
who did you have for 5-8 of the season? I think that was pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward, pretty boring. Yep. Jack Whiten.
His back end season was, and then he wasn't great at the start of the season, but that back end season was way too hard to pass up. Same as Cody Walker, wasn't too bad, but
no, Cody Walker, Luke Keary, there's plenty of guys there. Yeah, Jerome Luai,
Sean Johnson really kept the Sharks in there for a sniff. He wasn't too bad.
Well, that's right. Yeah, when he was there and available, like Sean Johnson was pretty good.
Well, that's right.
Somebody like a Jerome Luai who just, man, is it just me or is Jerome Luai just loves a trash talk? Yeah. Like, is that boy, you know, cocky or what? Holy moly. Like, he just loves the opportunity to just get stuck into anyone who makes a mistake.
Oh, that's what he did at that when that sort of first half ended.
He loves the niggle.
And well, I suppose when you've got this mountain standing right behind you, and Tarmour and James Fisher-Harris. Fisher-Harris is a massive human being as well.
I think a mention should go to James Fisher-Harris in that Penrith South game as well. He was massive at the back end of that game.
Yeah, he was. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think he can trash talk because he's got these massive dudes behind him.
No, that's right. But yeah, this is only his second year in first grade. He's only played 39 games or whatever. I just thought that maybe biting off a little bit too much than what he can chew. You know, it's all well and good to be cocky on a good team, and you know, a team that basically has won 18, you know, 17 straight. You know, had a draw, had a loss.
Yeah.
Throughout this season, like it's pretty easy to be able to sort of be a little bit cocky in that regard, but we'll see what he's like under the pressure and under the pump, especially the kind of pressure that Melbourne's going to put on him.
Or Munster will put on him big time.
No, that's right.
Or even anybody in Melbourne. I think the halfback was extremely straightforward, and I couldn't look past Luke Keary. That was too impossible to look past.
Wow.
Really?
Well, I've just gone with Nathan Cleary, so.
Ah, okay. I thought you were about to tell me someone different. Oh, shit. You said really? Nah, like, wow, yeah.
Nathan Cleary, I thought, was pretty clear cut. Mm-hmm. You know, you could, like you said, you know, 1-13, you know, super consistent most of the players with Penrith. But I thought, you know, his sort of poise and control that he played with a lot of these games. And not to take anything away from Luke Keary, like, you know, he was the same, but yeah. you just see that the massive improvement, I guess, you know, and confidence in Luke in Nathan Cleary, especially after playing with the winning side in New South Wales last year. He's just carried on and just been playing unbelievable after his little TikTok incident at the start of the COVID breaches, and I guess he'll want to put that behind him, but I thought he was just poise and control this season, and he just at this point is red hot form and looks unflappable.
There was an article too I read before we move on that Melbourne had an actual shock bid for him back in 2015 for Nathan Cleary after Cooper Cronk retired. Woo. So there was. it's you know, and they've come out and sort of confirmed it. But basically, when Cooper Conk retired, they put out, that's when Ivan Cleary got let go as well. So they just did a little, I guess, what's the word? I'm trying to think of the word, like stiff. Well, stiff's probably the best, a good word. just to see if Nathan had a get-out clause if his father got sacked, which he didn't. So it sort of pretty much ended there. But yeah, they were, because they were going to put then Ivan as a consultancy role, just to sort of pry him there. But yeah, that would have been very interesting. Obviously, he's, you know, clearly stayed at the right place, and his father's come back, and then there's... wonders for him. Prop of the year. This was probably the hardest one for me, I think.
Really? I thought it was pretty easy.
Who'd you go?
Josh Papali.
Yeah, I went Josh Papali, but James Fisher-Harris wasn't that far behind.
Fisher-Harris. Haas, like, you know, in a well-beaten Brisbane side. Payne Haas was one of their sort of shining beacons of light. You know, well, I sort of said it throughout the year, just because he can play 80 minutes doesn't mean he should be. He was pretty big, you know, in a fairly inexperienced side for Brisbane. Look, Papali was... On the back of Papali and Jack Whiten was the fuel that got Canberra to where they are now.
Yeah, that's fair. And I had him. I think Fisher-Harris just, you know, again, it's only 24, huge guy. I had Dan, his post-contact meters was 1,450, which is ridiculous. And he tackled over 90%. So
you could even go somebody, you know, like David Clemmer, you know, Daniel Saifidi. Yeah.
I mean,
Aiden Fanua Blake, Martin Tapau,
it was hard. Props were hard this galore. Year. Props were galore. Yeah, they were very hard this year. Who did you have for Hooker of the Year? I kind of have a guess who you've got. I know who. There's two people, but I kind of have a guess who you got.
You'll know exactly who it is, and it's Happy Coruscant.
You've been mentioning him all year.
We've talked him up all year. Well, I've probably talked him up a little bit more, but he has just had such a great year. How Manly let him slip through their fingers. I don't know.
Couldn't afford him. I think that's what it came down to.
Well, you've got to be creative. You got to find money for him, like to let him slip through the cracks. You know, obviously the Bulldogs are in contention to grab him as well, and then he sort of, you know, darted away from then and went to Penrith. And looking, you know, in hindsight, it looks like an absolutely terrific move.
Well, I mean, I think we've already said that, but he was clearly the buy of the year. There's no disputing that. I had him, and look. It could have been easy to sort of give it to Cameron Smith because he's had one of his best seasons in years. He's done a lot this year, but I think Appy just did, and then just on the improvement alone, just did enough. I think Cameron Smith just did what Cameron Smith does. So do you give it to someone all the time just because they do it so well, or do you give it to someone that's had such a great season because?
Oh well, that's right. It's like the MVP in the NBA. You know, you give it to. You don't give it to the same player every time just because they're the best player in the league. You give it, you know, the guys are having the best season.
Yeah.
So you give it to them. You don't just give it to the person who's the best player in the league. You could have given it to Harry Grant. You could have given it to as the season went on. You could have given it to Damian Cook. Like there was a few dummy halves that were out there that I thought sort of warranted a little bit of a mention, but. I've been talking up Coruscant all season, and there's just no way I could look past him.
Second row of the year.
Once again, it's somebody from Penrith.
Yeah.
It's the terrorizer.
It's who I had. Really, it's Willy Armey Kikau was just is just my God.
It's the terrorizer.
I think he's the best second row in the game right now. He just.
On form, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. On form at the moment, I think he has some disciplinary issues or lapses sometimes, but He is, like he's just said, a terror. It's extremely hard for him to get down.
At least he sort of knows how to reel it in a little bit. You know, not like, somebody who plays for the Broncos in Tevita Pangai Jr. He doesn't know how to reel it in, but he's in that mold. Like he's aggressive. You know, he's a big body and he's just super hard to sort of tackle. He's got a good offload. He just terrorizes the edge defenses. But, you know, Pangai Jr. is so ill-disciplined, it's not funny. And at least, you know, Viliami Kikau can sort of keep that in his pants a little bit and know when to sort of dial it down a little bit, where, you know, Tevita Pangai Jr., he's just got no governor at all.
No. And final position, the lock of the year.
I went with Jake Trbojevic. I thought that he was pretty big for, you know, in a fairly disappointing Manly side. Halfback of the year, you could almost put DCE in, like for what he did over this season. You know, he was the extreme focal point of that offense. But I thought, you know, the heart and soul of that Manly side is Jake Trbojevic, and I thought he's always massive, and he's once again, it's the consistency. He's a guy that doesn't go missing, and he will give you 110% every single time he goes out there and puts on that maroon Manly jersey.
I didn't give it to Trbojevic. I could have went, you know, talking about the one that just wears the heart and soul of their team, even though people are saying he had a quiet year. You could even give it to Taumalolo, because his quiet year was still 200 metres per game and 53 tackle-backs, but I think Cowboys played too poor for that.
He has to come into contention. Like, you know, Taumalolo is what he is, but, you know, he had a few injury issues this year. He missed the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks with calf injuries. I only didn't pick him really because he didn't play a lot of games this year. So, well, not sort of a lot of games, but like you said, it's the fact that the Cowboys sort of played so poorly, and I didn't really consider him a lot throughout this sort of process. I didn't really consider any of the Cowboys, to tell you the truth.
I end up giving it to Joseph Tapane. I just think he, at the, you know, again, probably like a White, and, you know, White, him, like, we're sort of, you're not going to put him up with White and Papali, I get that. But it's like he, well, I don't know if Stewart inspired him or what happened, but it's like he just sort of went on the back of Papali and White and stayed with him. And he was, oh my God, I didn't even realize. I mean, I know he's a big guy, but I didn't realize he was playing lock up until sort of a bit, because he was running like a front rower. It's amazing how big and how strong that guy is. But he's a
scary dude, and he's sort of reached his full potential there, I guess, at Canberra, where he was at Newcastle for a few years before that, and I guess they sort of didn't really tap into what he could really do, and obviously Newcastle, in the few years preceding up to now, they were a pretty ordinary team. And he was a little bit sort of younger, a little bit more raw. You know, Ricky Stewart harnessed that a little bit, and he's showing that on the field of being a fairly consistent player.
Yeah, that was the one thing I wrote down, is that I wouldn't say it was a loss for Newcastle, but maybe there wasn't just enough there for what they seen. And just what you said, Ricky sort of harnessed what he needed from him, and probably Papali's just got in his ear. That's what it looks like a lot, is Papali's just been in this guy's ear. I heard that a lot on the radio when I was listening to Canberra games, is that these two were talking and Papali just said, yeah, you know, I've sort of taken him under my wing, because he's only 24.
Right. Yeah, and Papali's not even that old, so.
Oh, my God. It's scary.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
he's such a nugget too. Like, yeah, Papali, you agree? He'd be shorter than Taumalolo, but I reckon he'd be wider than him.
Oh, I'd have to be. At least those legs are wider than his.
Oh, there's, man, no, they're tree trunks. They're tree trunks. So you'd need a chainsaw to cut through them.
At least. That was our team of the year. Was there any other sort of bits you wanted to finish up on?
Look, I just want to put a special shout out there to the New Zealand Warriors for what I think we've sort of talked about them this year. You know, for what they had to go through and sacrifice to keep the competition running and, you know, legitimate, you know, rather than them not being here and only being 15 teams out of 16. For what they did, you know, quarantining out in Tamworth, having their base on the Central Coast there, it was just a testament to all those guys. Like Todd Payton did an unbelievable job with what, you know, the troops that he had there. You know, they had a few player loans. You know, teams are coming to mm-hmm. to the aid of New Zealand when they had some guys that wanted to go home. You know, they're two big wingers in Fusatura and Kemba Malo sort of only played four or five games of the season, and then they decided to go back home. And just for the effort and what they did, and to be so close to actually making the finals all the way up until about round 19, I think they were still a mathematical chance to make the finals.
They were definitely recognised at the Dally M's too, so they've come up as the Proven Southerns team of the year, but more of like an inspiration thing. But two of the players that were recognised, Tohu Harris was recognised as one of the second rowers of the year. He was great.
No, that's true.
And
he's one of those guys that's come out of the Melbourne system and gone there, and he probably doesn't get a lot of the recognition that he would have got playing with the Melbourne Storm, but he was absolutely one of their best, and you could have considered him for second rower of the year.
It was definitely close enough. And then the other player that got mentioned was captain of the year, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. So
RTS, no, that's right. Yeah. Like we say it all the time. Like you want to talk about the heart and soul. He's the heart and soul. He's the heart and soul of New Zealand Rugby League at the moment. Like, you know, forget about Sean Johnson or anyone like that. RTS is absolutely the heart and soul of what New Zealand Rugby League is at the moment.
If they can sort of convince, and I'm not saying New Zealand players, but if Nathan Brown and by the sounds of it, Gus Gould as well, can convince some certain players to go there, and even if it sets it up for later, they've always been there. They just need that. I don't know. I mean, I think it's their halves that I'm still not sold on.
Look, not really. And, you know, I guess if we want to sort of move on, I'm not sure if you had a most improved player for the year at all.
Yeah, well, I mentioned it. I had Steve. I mean, I could have gave it to Coruscant because I feel like that was a bit blatant, but I gave it just – I said Stephen Crichton earlier. I just think because of his rookie season, how much he dramatically improved from one rookie season to the next season, his sophomore, if you want to look at it that way. Yeah, Stephen Crichton. Right. That's who I guess for me,
it's Chanel Harris Tevita.
Yeah,
he made leaps and bounds in improvement to sort of not so much to carry a lot of the workload, you know, with that New Zealand side, but he showed a lot of class, you know, even in losses for the Warriors. I thought he'd absolutely made a giant step up in class from what he has, you know, in previous years. I thought he was fantastic in a lot of those New Zealand games.
That's fair. I don't know if it's him I'm just not sold on yet, or Cody Nikorama at 5'8". I don't know. I'm just not completely sold on their halves yet. I mean, he's still young. He's like 21, 22. So Chanel's still
got them as a halves combination. If they play a little bit more football together, then they should be able to develop a really good chemistry. It's the depth over there in the Warriors.
If one of those
guys go down, then they're in a little bit of strife.
And it's also – and I'm trying to think. I couldn't even think of it who would be at the top of my head, but I think I still think there's a void in that dummy half once Isaac Luke left. I don't know.
No, that's right. You know, they're using Kane Lawton and Wade Egan – as they're sort of they're two dummy halves that they were sort of throwing out this year. Look, as you could say solid, but I would probably say below average dummy halves there. They could definitely use a more sort of spark driven, energy driven Dummy half.
You know, and you know who would be great there? Who's already New Zealander? And I hope he doesn't, but if he does, is Brandon Smith.
Is Brandon Smith.
Would be phenomenal
he
would there.
Fit, he would fit in so well in a lot of other places.
Oh, but like, you know, New Zealand guy, that spark, like you said. That's yeah, right. He could. Yeah, wow. I don't want that to happen, but.
No, of course
wait
not.
To well, see what Cameron Smith does.
I would absolutely love to see him come up to the Gold Coast, but. Yeah, that's
stop poaching
that's
people complete. Off us. No, it's not you. Every no. team does.
Just,
every team.
Just pay
every
them,
team.
Then. It's not. Pay them.
Well, you can't pay everybody. That's a problem. Although
you,
it's interesting
what are you
now.
About? That's what are you talking about? It's been done before. Yeah, don't act like you don't know what's going on there.
Well, no, I don't know what's going on there. But Cameron Smith's money's coming up. You know that well. Supposedly that's going to come up, so that'll be good. At least to play with, or to some shore up. But we're losing a few players too. So Tino, most likely, Adokar, most likely, Vunivalu. So, yeah. But it'll just be with Bellamy. Bellamy will find someone. He always does. So it's just the
as
way.
As long as Bellamy stays there.
Yeah. That I don't want to, that one. And of all the players and all that, because it's happened all the time, that's the one I don't want to talk about. Bellamy going anywhere. That's the one, because he's
the one.
The key. He is the key of that.
He is absolutely the key.
If we lose him, I don't know. Unless he's got someone
be prepared to be brought back to the pack.
Nah, that's not going to happen. He won't leave Melbourne like that. He'll work out something. Consultancy, or he's got someone in the background that's, you know, he's been grooming. Who knows? But we'll see.
Well, that's right. Well, let's talk about Jason Riles, but he's sort of leaving to go coach a little bit of, I think it's English club rugby, but he's only doing that for 1 year, so which is really bizarre. And I've seen an interview, I think it was on NRL Tonight on Fox League, and they sort of hit him with the question, and it's like, after your year in England next year, like, would you be open to, you know, coming back to Australia and possibly taking over the Storm? And he's just like, oh, I'd absolutely consider it. So, I thought that was an insight into the future.
Well, it's just Brisbane. Brisbane, keep your mitts off of all everybody. That's our CEO and everybody. God, I hate Brisbane.
No, well, that's the thing too. They just think that they're entitled to everybody that's big and great in the league, whether it's executives, whether it's coaches and everything. It's just like, it just doesn't work that way anymore.
No, it doesn't. Well,
they just don't have the luster. They just don't have the luster anymore.
No, they don't. And that's what they've got to come back to. Hopefully that's what Kevy teaches them, that they don't have the luster anymore.
That's right. They've got to come back to earth. They've got to come back to earth a little bit, and they've got to earn that respect.
We don't want to waffle on about them, but, you know, if you look back Brisbane before they earned before they started winning those titles, no one knew half of those players. Really, no one knew half like the Langers of the world and the Walters of the world and all that. They earned that.
Oh, that's right.
And Renoffs of the world and all that. They, you know, they threw Wally around in there and all that. But, I mean, the Langers, Gilmeisters, all that. They earned that. That's
everybody
what they need to go back
the,
to.
Everybody knew who the king was.
Yeah, that's right. But then the king didn't win a lot of titles. I'm talking about your Langers, your Walters.
No,
you know,
that's right. Yeah, well, they had no, well, not so much no option, but they in the turf.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they had to. I think they had no option. So
no, that's right.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
went to the
Gold
Coast.
They built from that, and they built from scratch, and then they built. That's what they need to do again.
Well, that's right. They've not so much start from the ground up, but you've got to go out there, and you've got to put some luster and put some respect on that
hopefully.
Jersey. Nobody fears that jersey anymore.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And that hopefully that this has been a reality check that, you know, we're not invincible and that we can finish last. That's so, right. Well, that'll do it this week for the NRL pod. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Final Play Pod and Facebook, as always, Final Play Podcast, where you can pick up our podcasts, all 99 of them. I should say close to 100.
Right, we're up to 90. We're up to 99. One more. I think the next one that we'll be doing will be the NBA Finals, which I guess sort of will be a little bit fitting to bring up 100.
Yeah.
Just sort of thanks for the support for everybody that listens to us on a regular basis. We're always muchly appreciative of everybody's support, and get out there and like and share us and sort of share us around. Yeah, whether it's on SoundCloud, whether it's on Spotify, you know, suggest us out there to your friends. And if you think that they'd like to hear what we're talking about, you know, we talk about a whole array of different stupid crap. So, you know,
we can. There's no reason why we can't.
Like we're doing it now. We just we get through all the good stuff and then we just waffle on at the end of the pod.
Mate, I could talk about US politics if people want us to. Well, I'm sure we can dig up some crap. That'd be hilarious talking about that for about 40 minutes. Yeah, that'd be good. Like, yeah, I don't want to get to a point where where our pods are going to get past our Facebook likes, and we're not there yet. So just keep liking.
So, like and share us around. Put us out there, and we'll the content just keeps on coming.
All right. Well, my name's Jason. Oh, mate, I'll just keep doing as much content as possible, Smith.
Oh, absolutely. I'm Miles. Hopefully this grand final is not a dud plum, but.
Ooh. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard the way the game's been going, but if it's going to be a dud, then Melbourne's just going to blow them off the park. That's the only way that's going to be possible.
I just hope that it's going to be competitive and, you know, not a bit of a smash fest, you know, sort of a discrepancy in big game experience. Like, yeah, there's a lot of internationals and a lot of guys that have played Origin and stuff like that in that Penrith side. But, you know, I heard sort of a quote today on a grand final preview sort of show on Fox Sports News that, you know, representative games and representing your country and your state and everything like that is terrific. But when you put on, you know, when you put on that club jersey, you want to win a premiership. It's about the marathon. Yeah, you know, the representative stuff all comes into it, and that's all terrific, and that's all gravy on top of the chips. But you want to win a competition, and now it's come to it, and we're down to the final two teams.
And go Melbourne. That's it.
I'm
a Melbourne supporter. It's gonna be close, but I think Melbourne's just got enough. And I'm saying just because. You know, we keep saying about Roosters, but Penrith really have the 1-17, solid 1-17, really solid 1-17.
Yeah, the grand final day is always, you know, always something, you know, that's always been big for me for a long time, and for you as well. You know, it's grand final day. You know, you always it's always a big occasion. Doesn't really matter who's in it. You know, as footy fans, you always want to sort of watch the grand final, and you don't want to watch it. You want to have an intriguing game. You don't want to see a demolition.
No, of course not. And you know, hopefully they get up to the numbers that they want there, the COVID numbers restriction. But
well,
at least
that's going
to
be that's going to be funny too, because they only had about 40,000 at ANZ for the game that was on Saturday night, and they had just under 40,000 at Suncorp. So I don't know how they're going to work this. It's obviously not going to be a full stadium. And there's going to be no reserve grade or anything like that as well. So it's just going to be the women's grand final and the men's grand final. So hopefully they're not charging a full price, because I think you're getting duped out of your money a little bit. But
no, I think I read so if the tickets were $59, which is fair. I mean, the general tickets.
For all seats, or the cheapest tickets are $59?
Well, I just read general admission, so probably the cheap seats, possibly.
Yeah, right.
So, but well, you know, I also read somewhere as well that New South Wales did come out and said they were increasing the just like Brisbane are doing for the AFL Grand Final, the increasing their numbers by I think another 20%, because their cases have been pretty low. So they might end up getting, you know, up to 50,000-60,000 hopefully. Yeah, I think
if they get around the 50,000 there, yeah, it probably won't look too silly, but. I don't know if you've ever been up the very tippity top of ANZ Stadium.
No.
It's a long way up there.
No, I've been it's funny, every time I go to ANZ, it's always been down the net, right down, not right down the front, but like not far, probably 10 rows deep.
No, that's so, right.
Yeah, no,
last,
I've never been up the tippity top.
The last time I was there, 2017 grand final for Melbourne and North Queensland, we were about, I don't even think we were 10 rows back from the field. It was terrific, but. I've been there for the 2008 grand final for Melbourne and the Sea Eagles, and we were boy, we were right at the top. I always felt like I was going to get a nosebleed going all the way up there. Holy moly. It just goes forever up the top there. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, they've configured a little bit now, but and it's sort of intimidating a bit too, going up that far up as well.
Oh, it's messy.
So, yeah. All right. Have a good week, everyone. See ya.
See ya.